Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
We're here to do a season one preview for the brand new series House of the Dragon. Aaron, we got a lot to talk about today. I know that you've seen the premiere already, and I don't want to get into spoilers, but I will at some point ask you your opinion on it. You went out to LA to see this thing.
I did. I got all cleaned up and fancy and attended the world premiere. And I was lucky enough to see the first episode a couple weeks ago now. I've only seen it once. I haven't got access screeners to see it again. But I've thought and talked about it a lot. And I hope to be able to answer all those questions.
Yeah, there is actually a podcast out with you kind of talking about it right now over in the... Well, this feed, actually.
Yeah.
But it's titled Tyrion 11. So you gotta do a little digging for it.
So go back to this feed
and you'll find that if you want a lot of discussion about general feelings on the episode, mm-hmm. right? Because you can't get into spoilers.
No.
But I don't know how much of that we're going to cover today, but I do want to mention it for people who are interested. I also want to mention a few other things before we get started here. Our intro theme. You might be thinking, that sounds a lot like the Game of Thrones theme that they had before. You're 100% right. It is the exact same music. We'll probably be using that until we see the show come up with a consistent theme. Because, I mean, how do you guess? I mean, this is based on the theme from Game of Thrones. We want to do the same for House of the Dragon if we can. But there's no theme yet. So we'll be updating that pretty soon.
Yeah, in fact, and this could be because it was not finished, but if I recall correctly, there wasn't an opening theme to the premiere episode of season one, which I think is the same as the original Game of Thrones. I can't remember that pilot episode. It's been so long since I've seen it. I can't remember if it had the distinctive credit sequence.
I don't know.
I'm sure it'll eventually get one. But, you know, the other thing is like... The Highway Superstars 80s TV remix is a banger of the Game of Thrones theme. So, like, I honestly wouldn't be angry if we had to keep it the whole season, you know?
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. I would like to update it. Maybe we can talk with him and see if he wants to do an updated version.
We do have fresh cover art. I'm not sure if the final version will be ready by the time you're hearing this, but hopefully when the series actually deploys this weekend, we hired Chase Stone, who's a very talented Magic the Gathering artist, and he also did a lot of artwork for official George Martin products like The World of Ice and Fire. And he did a lot of custom art for me and Maester Anthony's book, The Gods of Thrones. He's come to do a new, it's the concept is Jim is sitting on the Iron Throne and I'm his, one of his Kingsguard, probably the Lord Commander. I don't know. Do I think that much of myself?
Sure. Look, if I can be King, you could be Lord Commander for God's sake.
And he's, I'm the one forsaking all my titles and heirs here. Mm-hmm. And, he's looking imperious from the throne. I think it looks amazing. I think it's going to be, it's super cool. And it's going to be very eye-catching. I can't wait for you guys to see the final version. So we're spiffing things up. We're very excited for this Hot D.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, everybody knows there are some reasons to be concerned about the Game of Thrones franchise based on how the last iteration went. But I'm freshly excited for this show to come out. I've seen the trailer, obviously, and that trailer looks pretty awesome. It looks like we're kind of resetting the board back to... the beginning of Game of Thrones. We don't have all that baggage, right? We're 200 mm-hmm. years in the past. None mm-hmm. of that stuff really matters. Let's start fresh and see where it takes us. Speaking of seeing where it takes us, let's go over to talk a little bit about our plans for coverage for this episode. Where are we taking that?
Well, our plan is, if you're familiar with our Game of Thrones podcast of yore, it's going to be very familiar. We're going to, on the night of the episode dropping, when it concludes, 10 or 15, enough time to get everybody time to use the bathroom, get a drink, and for us to hustle off to the microphones, we're going to be doing an instant take podcast, which will be available for everyone. But for club members, and you can join the club at support.baldmove.com, you can watch us record that live and join in on the instant talk portion of that podcast, which is the second half that we don't give away for free. And that's where you can use the chat interface to ask questions, make comments, advance your own theories, and we will consider as many as that we have time for until it peters out. So that will be what kicks off each week's coverage. On Tuesday, we will have the typical Bald Move deep dive, full recap and analysis podcast, where, you know, we try to get as much information about the show, like both artistically, thematically, plot wise, try to answer as many questions and bring in a lot of different viewpoints into that. And then later in the week, Thursday, we will have a feedback section that you can participate by sending email to hotd@baldmove.com. And now the one thing you might be like, what about a spoiler? Okay. Classic Game of Thrones fans will know that I used to host a special segment where I would do talk about essentially book implication emails and talk about different, you know, pet favorite, or I guess pet theories, different conspiracy theories that people were trying to, you know, build from the books. I don't know how much of that I'm going to do this year. I do have a spoiler segment that's going to debut this Sunday night. I interviewed Kim Renfro, who's also seen the first episode. There's a little bit of a lore shakeup that you're going to find out about, that we do a deep dive on. And I highly recommend that for people who are in, you know, all the spoiler stuff. If you just care about the show, you can safely skip. But the fact of the matter is, Fire and Blood has the rough outline for this entire series. I'm sure there'll be deviations. I'm sure there'll be changes, but you are going to roughly know if you've kept up with Targaryen lore in his short stories, like The Princess and the Queen and The Rogue Prince, which later became fleshed out and added to that Fire and Blood history. There's not going to be a lot of like genuine surprises in the terms of plot mechanics. So I reserve the right to do more spoilers. It's just, I'm not going to do them every week. It's going to be like when there's something big that comes up, when there's an aha moment, when it seems like there's connections from this series, possible connections this series to Game of Thrones and beyond, then we'll bring it back. But three podcasts a week, not too shabby.
Yeah. And that's actually on top of what Maester Anthony, who you might be familiar with if you've checked out any of the Electric Boogaloo stuff that's been on this feed, is going to be doing on Wednesdays. He's going to drop his stuff over on the Double Dragon feed. So Bald Move is going to be brimming with House of the Dragon coverage throughout its entire run.
And thanks to Maester Anthony for keeping her throne warm and the long hiatus between Game of Thrones and this. You might recognize him as being my writing partner. We wrote The Gods of Thrones Volume 1 and 2 together, which is an exploration of the religions and the real-life religious inspirations of Westeros and The Song of Ice and Fire. And he's got some fantastic, he's been doing a chapter by chapter dissection of Game of Thrones and bringing in historians and medievalists and religious experts and people that are experts on Dothraki languages to add. But he's going to be a good partner, and he'll be joining us at least for one segment a week on the feedback section, the Maester's Corner, where we're going to together tackle some kind of more steeped in lore or theory impactful piece of feedback.
Yeah, and we might have some more fun stuff coming up to announce later. Some stuff in the works that who knows where that'll go.
True.
If you want to get, you know, in on our Sunday night live stream coverage, you can go to support.baldmove.com and click over to our Patreon account to find out how to do all that. But everybody else is going to get everything, tons of content. So we hope you enjoy that.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Okay. Aaron, we've got a lot to talk about in regards to what we expect to see coming up in the show. Where do you want to start with that?
You mentioned you had questions for me.
I do.
Well, you want to start in on that, and then we'll see where we branch off from there?
Yeah, I guess like the overarching question here or theme for these questions is, what do I need to know about the world before watching this first episode? Is there any like background information that's going to be helpful but not spoil anything?
Yeah, I'm gonna I've got a couple of notes here on this. This is something that I got a lot on social media and email, people saying, hey, I hope you guys do some sort of roundup for us that are only Game of Thrones watchers. You know, like, how much do we need to know? Like, are Starks and Lannisters still going to be a thing? Are all the castles in the same place? Is there still a wall? Like, what's going on? Will everybody's house sigil be the same? Is this going to be recognizably Westeros? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is a resounding yes with a quieter no, which we'll get into, because Westeros is still Westeros. You know, this is going to, you know, we're going to start off examining the reign of King Viserys, which is not like the douchebag brother of Daenerys. This is the OG king, Viserys I, who is a father of the One and a husband of another of the two queens that is essentially going to be at the center of the Dance of Dragons. This is this big Targaryen civil war that's going to consume Westeros and fundamentally change the Targaryens forever. Put them on the path to eventual extinction that we saw, you know, post the Robert's Rebellion that we're familiar with from a Game of Thrones.
And
so, yeah,
surprise,
Westeros is...
Surprise, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, this is all about who's going to take over the throne, right?
Yes.
Big surprise.
It is still very much a Game of Thrones, even though it's a house, it's contained within the House of Dragons. So now this is also just two, like we mentioned before, this is just 200 years before the events of season one of Game of Thrones. This isn't like The Long Night. This isn't something that happened in antiquity. This isn't something shrouded in mystery. This is stuff that we have well attested accounts from maesters. There's not a lot of it. So it's most of the locations, like there is a King's Landing. There is a wall. It's still there. There's a Winterfell. A Stark is sitting in it. You know, all that stuff will be familiar. You know, like, and they're immediately recognizable. Like when you see King's Landing for the first time, you might see a couple additional buildings you don't reckon, like the dragon pits are no longer a ruin because they're 200 years and they're full of dragons, and that's going to be exciting. But like when you see King's Landing, you're like, hot damn, that's King's Landing. There's another location, the ruins of Harrenhal. That was the first castle that got laid the waste by Aegon. When you'll see them and you're going to like, hot fuck yeah, that's Harrenhal. So I think you'll instantly be familiar with the geography. And then there's a lot of institutions like the Kingsguard, the Gold Cloaks, you know, the King's Landing kind of police force, the Maesters. You're going to see those guys. I see that dude in the gray burlap dress, and he's got a funny chain around his neck. That there's a Maester. And that dude in the cool white armor is very much a Kingsguard. And they're not only immediately recognizable, but they're also, I think, distinctly cool. I compare it to, like, do you know, like, Captain America looked like in the first Avengers movie? And then, like, the way his armor looks in, like, Civil War or The Winter Soldier. Yeah. And it's a little bit, you know, the Avengers is a little bit more of a streamlined look, a little goofier. And, you know, it's a lot more rugged and realist. I think the Kingsguard has gone through a similar transformation. Immediately recognizable, but very cool.
They're spending a reported $20 million per episode on this, and based on that trailer, it shows. Like, look, Game of Thrones always had great production values, but I think
not
they
always
really upped
but
the game. Well, sure, some of the CGI was a little shaky from time to time. I think they fixed that problem based on the CGI I saw in that trailer, and the way they've grounded you in a location and in this world with its production design is incredible. It's like nothing I've ever seen.
Oh, and I agree. It looks like you can see all the dollars. And like, if you go back and watch the first, especially season of Game of Thrones, it's never a cheap show, but it definitely looked cheaper than it eventually gets. And we're going to come back to hot D, and the it's firing on all the cylinders. It looks amazing. And you're certainly going to hear names that you'll recognize, like the Stark and Lannisters, especially the Baratheons. In the early goings of this series, I don't expect these houses that were big players in, you know, the Dany and Jon timeline to be big players now, primarily because the Targaryens have had a century to consolidate their power and intermarry and spread peace and unity by sword and dragon and marriage alliance. And they're just going to suck all the oxygen out of the room. They are the supreme rulers of Westeros. Instead, we'll get to know other houses that are more central to this plot, like the Hightowers in particular, out of Old Town, which you may remember is the seat of the Maester's power in Westeros. The Citadel is in Old Town. Their seat is the Hightower, which is a combination fortress and massive lighthouse that keeps this burning beacon on top to guide mariners to its harbors. They're one of the oldest and proudest of the houses in Westeros, and we didn't get to know them very well during Game of Thrones. We barely got to see the city when Sam and Gilly visited. They're going to be a big power brokers, because their head is serving as the hand of the king at the time that we begin. But others, I've read Fire and Blood a couple times now, and you're definitely going to see some of those older houses become more prominent players in the grand sweep of time. So, I thought maybe it'd be a good idea to like talk about the state of the board as we go into this first episode. Like, what is the backstory?
What houses do I need to know? How do they connect to each other? All that stuff.
And none of this is spoilers. I find it very probable that they're going to find ways to work some of this material into the series going forward. But like, none of this is spoilers. It's all essentially pre the series happening. So, as we mentioned, this is going to start off with King Viserys I, who's played by Paddy Considine. And he comes to the throne via disputed inheritance because his brother, who was the old king, Jaehaerys, indisputed and undisputed heir, died shortly before his father because his father lived so fucking long. They don't call him the old king for nothing. So they settled this hash at a big grand council that they called, and they settled on Viserys as being the new heir. And we're going to talk about the fallout of that here in a bit. Now, Viserys is a pretty good king. He rode Balerion the Black Dread, which you'll recall is the big dragon that Aegon came and whipped all of Westeros' ass. But at this point, Balerion is old, and about a year or two after he swung his leg over him, he just died of old age.
Damn.
And Viserys never chose another dragon to ride, because, you know, where are you going to go from Balerion, right? Mm-hmm. His wife, the queen, is Queen Aemma, played by Cian Brooke, which is his cousin. You'll know this is Game of Thrones. Lots of incest, especially with the Targaryens. They love marrying brother, sister, boy. Cousin to cousin, mother to son, son. It's all crazy, but they're in the blood of the dragon, so I guess it's okay. And their marriage has been marked by sadness, because the queen, unfortunately, has just been beset by trouble giving birth. She's delivered a male heir that was stillborn, several daughters that didn't make it out of the womb, unfortunately. And this has been a source of despair and worry for the king and queen for a long time. But as we join the story, they have had one successful child, a preteen to early teen daughter, Rhaenyra, who is known as the Realm's Delight, and they dote over this daughter. She serves as her father's cupbearer and is privy to a lot of the goings on in state. She rides the dragon Syrex, who has yellow scales. Rhaenyra is played by two actors, Millie Alcock and Emma D'Arcy. Millie is the younger version. Emma is going to be eventually the Dance of Dragons era queen. And this is the dragon. The Syrax is the dragon with yellowish scales that you see glowering behind Millie Alcock and all the show posters. You know, it's a big, large, established dragon. Mm-hmm. The reign of Viserys is considered the apex of Targaryen power. There's never been in Westeros more lords and princes with the blood of the dragons flowing through their veins. They've had time to make key marriage alliances to nearly every other great house. There's also more dragons than ever. They've had a successful breeding program. The dragons are producing so many eggs, it's become customary for every Targaryen to put one in the crib of their newborn babe to ensure that the hatchling and the new babe form an effortless dragon riding pair.
How about some omelets? Can we get some dragon egg omelets?
There might be enough left over to make omelets for select kings and queens. Viserys is very well liked. He's wealthy from his father's very long and peaceful rule. He's by nature a very generous man, which only tended to increase his popularity. There's a lot of things going for the Targaryens, but there's also some downsides. It's been at least a generation, if not two, who's seen war in Westeros, which means there's legions of knights and lords who don't know the horrors of battle, but are nevertheless itching for the glory of battle and perhaps to settle some slights and some scores, some bad, like in The Godfather, you know, every couple of years you got to do a war. You got to go to the mattresses or the blood gets to be too bad. Yep. Well,
take up some hobbies. Know. Come on. What are we doing?
And there's also a lot of bitterness and rivalry. Chief amongst this is Princess Rhaenys, who rides Malaes, I think is how you pronounce it, the Red Queen. She's played by Eve Best, and her husband Corlys Velaryon. He is the striking gentleman with the silver dreadlocks that you might have seen. He's known as the Sea Snake. He's essentially a Han Solo type, and except for the Millennium Falcon, he sails on sailing ships.
It's the Bronn type, if you were to compare him to a Game of Thrones character.
Okay. Maybe not that roguish a little bit, gotcha. But you're on, he's definitely got that kind of that pirate swagger to him. And his wife, Rhaenys, was passed over by that great council we talked about. She was the heir apparent, but the realm decided the last minute, you know what? Just don't want a woman on the throne. So they bypassed her for Viserys, which is a source of consternation. And the Velaryons are a powerful house in their own right. They're very close cousins to the Targaryens. They actually came to Westeros slightly before the Targaryens did, and they're long-term allies. The Targaryens rule the skies with their dragons, and the Velaryons rule the sea with their navy. So there's some bad blood there. Then you got the King's Hand, Otto Hightower, you know, this big, powerful, very proud Hightower house. He's played by Reese Ivins. And he has been in the position of the Hand for very many years. He'd previously been the Hand to the Old King. As such, he has his hands on every lever of power in the kingdom. Everyone knows it, and the other lords have kind of become envious of his position, the access he has to the king, and these things have made him kind of be a little bit imperious and haughty, which has not also helped his relations with the rest of Westeros. Now, Otto has a daughter, Alicent Hightower, who's played as a child by Emily Carey and as a full-grown adult by Olivia Cooke, and her and Princess Rhaenyra on the show are going to start off as BFFs before fate forces them into becoming rivals. Okay. Then you got the king's brother, Daemon Targaryen, played by Matt Smith, which was a big question mark. I've never seen Matt Smith play a dynamic, heroic, dashing figure because I haven't seen a lot of him, and I'm not a big Doctor Who fan. Yeah. But he kind of kills it in this role. This is the rogue prince. He's very charming. He's very roguish. He was a knight by 16. The old King Jaehaerys granted him the boon of, you know, there's two great Targaryen swords, Blackfyre, which is traditionally held by the king, and Dark Sister, which was wielded by Aegon Targaryen's, the Conqueror's warrior sister. And he was granted that at a very young age for recognition of his martial prowess. He rides the dragon Caraxes, a powerful red dragon nicknamed the Blood Worm, and he's something of a scoundrel. He considers himself the clear heir to the throne. While he is away from court, he invariably gets himself into trouble. So Otto and the king have schemed many ways to try to keep him busy. They try to make him master of the coin, and he almost bankrupts the realm. They make him master of law, but he is not a great student of the law, we'll take it. And these were both kind of disasters and political scandals for the king. So they decided to make him head of the City Watch, which at the time is this undermanned, underfund, kind of shabby police force that can barely hold in check the rising tide of crime in this seedy King's Landing. And you wonder, is that a good idea to give your roguish brother control of the city's cops? We'll see. And for herself, Rhaenyra never had any pretensions to the throne because they just decided the generation before her that women can never sit on the throne. She definitely seen her aunt at court the entire time brooding over the fact that she was passed over. So she was never really threatened by her uncle Daemon's ambition. In fact, she actually really likes him. He's known to, when he goes and roams, to bring her back exotic gifts when he lands in King's Landing on his dragon. And she thinks he's just the coolest uncle ever. And the king, Viserys, genuinely loves Daemon. Because they had happy memories growing up. He remembers this free-spirited and adventurous boy of his youth when maybe he should be looking at the danger of the man and what a Daemon kingship would look like to the realm. But he's ultimately not worried because he and his queen Aemma are relatively young. And despite their troubles before, the queen is now presently pregnant. And he just knows it's going to be a boy. And it's going to solve all the bitterness and rivalry, and it's going to sort out the line of succession for all time. And that is the state of the world as we go into this first episode of House of the Dragon. Definitely, nice. There's a lot going for House Targaryen, but there's a lot of minefields bubbling underneath the surface too. So I hope that sets the stage. What other questions you got?
Well, for me, I know this was a big question I had about Game of Thrones going into it. I'm not the world's biggest fantasy fan, and I liked Game of Thrones despite that. So I'm wondering, aside from dragons, obviously I can handle my dragons now. I've seen Game of Thrones. And more dragons sounds great. How much magic are we talking about in this world? Is there still a lot of stuff around the edges? Or I know there's not going to be anything like the Night King or whatever, and the White Walkers coming south or anything like that. But
right.
Are we still looking at some magic in this world?
We got the dragons.
They're more creatures than magic.
And I would say in the early going, they're not. Yeah. And it does seem like even though we know from our experience with Game of Thrones that dragons are in some kind of real way tied to the fabric of magic in this world, that like as one wanes, they kind of both do. But in early goings, I don't think there's a lot. It's almost all just naked human drama, sometimes involving naked humans. It's just naked human drama and political intrigue, with the dragons serving as like, this is the, you know, obviously they're the nuclear weapons of the time. So I do think that there is, they do introduce a character, Mysyria, who is played by, shoot, I didn't write her down because it wasn't part of my little, yes,
you
thank you.
From a lot of, is Alex Garland's works?
He likes Ex Machina. She starred in Devs. She's fantastic. She plays, I were going to say, a Melisandre-esque character.
Okay.
Or will become a Melisandre, kind of a shadowy sorceress. Is it, but is she real or is it just built up as a bullshit? But that's, we'll have to see where that goes. But again, I think it's very in the realm of Games of Thrones, in terms of, or Game of Thrones rather, in terms of the political intrigue, the human drama, and putting that to the forefront.
Okay. Yeah, I've actually heard this story, and this is going to sound bad to you because I know you're not a huge fan, but I've heard this described as Succession with dragons, because it deals largely with the single family, right? A lot of that drama is around the familial bonds or lack thereof in some cases. So I don't know, people who are into that sort of thing, and Succession was just on for its third season, might come over to this thinking, okay, well, let me see that with dragons.
No, I can see that. And it's similar to like what I understand in Succession. You know, we've seen a couple episodes where, you know, everyone in this family knows they got the blood of the dragon flowing through it. Frequently, they are dragon riders themselves. And there's in the back of their mind, man, if I was sitting on that throne, things would be better.
Sure.
And that's not a stable configuration for a realm.
Yeah. The other thing that might concern some people in this crowd, I know that there are a lot of George Martin fans out there, not just people who've watched the Game of Thrones series, but people who maybe have read the books that these this show is going to be based on. What is that? Fire and Blood? Is that the name?
Yeah, Fire and Blood is the one. I know. Like I said, the princess and the queen, or the queen and the princess and the rogue prince were the start of that, but it's my understanding that those all were subsumed and expanded into Fire and Blood, which is essentially a Targaryen history book and written as such. It's not narrative so much as it reads like an encyclopedia.
Right, and I think that's interesting. I did a little bit of digging to try and figure out like how closely these are going to line up with the books, these episodes, and I found some fairly conflicting information in an IGN interview with Ryan Condal.
Who's the showrunner?
Who is one of the showrunners? George Martin. Yeah, Miguel Sapochnik is the other one, right? And he's more of a director, which, or at least he was on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's my understanding the division of power is essentially Ryan Condal is going to be in charge of like the overarching narrative structure and kind of like, you know, the show operation, and Miguel is going to be kind of responsible for everything that happens in front of camera. Not that he's going to direct every episode, although he does direct a pilot, but it's kind of like their division of like in, you know, behind the scenes in front of the camera type.
Which is interesting because I haven't really seen anything that Ryan Condal's done in the past. I watched a couple of episodes of Colony, which was his television show from 2016. But he wrote Rampage and Hercules and some other stuff. He's going to be doing the Highlander remake, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's something we've long said would be ripe for a remake.
Right, but he actually has a podcast, I forget the name of it, where he talks about a lot of the production stuff on House of the Dragon, and it has a lot to say about writing and creating the show. So I'm hoping he'll be good in the role, but the stuff that he talked about with IGN was interesting because they asked him about that, like how close is it going to be to the book, and he says, quote, we're taking more of the approach of playing with the history as it was written, essentially saying that this is the objective truth that happened. So
yeah,
it's my understanding in Fire and Blood and the short stories you're talking about, there are a lot of conflicting perspectives.
Yes.
I think, right? Like accounts of things that are secondhand or third hand that maybe people are not there for, or in some cases, eyewitnesses to it, written by second or third parties. And some of those conflict with each other. And where do you say, you know, this particular account is more valid? Well, he's got kind of a hierarchy that they're going to go through. You know, eyewitness accounts are more valid in that case than someone who's like, I heard a rumor or hearsay or whatever. But their plan is not to. So the idea of the show is not going to be to like show those different conflicting perspectives and accounts. It's going to be to define the absolute objective truth.
Right. What's the God's eye perspective? And Kim had a discussion. I'm not sure if this comes up on my friend Kim Renfro from The Insider. And she's also now the co-host of Cast of Kings with David Chin. Mm-hmm. I know she's mentioned this on their preview that they did last week. She mentioned in an interview she had with Ryan Condal that he started to talk about that stuff. And she clarified, it's like, do you consider this canon? And he kind of warbles, like, well, you know, that's kind of George's thing, but know, this is pretty official. Because you're right, Fire and Blood is written in universe by Archmaester Gildane. Mm-hmm. And he quotes from, you know, this is 200 years after fact. He quotes from sources like Septon Eustace, which seems to be a very reliable source. There's also the court fool Mushroom that he quotes for more salacious details. And a lot of the events will get to a point where Gildane says, well, you know, Eustace says this, and Mushroom says this, and this other maester says this, and the woman who is in the bedchambers of the king alleges this. And there's all these different spectrums of like possibilities. And it sounds like the show is going to collapse those down to what it considers the truth.
Yeah. So if you have like a favorite pet account or whatever of an event, it might not turn out to play out exactly how you'd like it to.
Yeah.
But I think they're for the most part going to try to walk the line between that objective truth and not changing events so much. But then you get to, So there's another quote which supports that. He says, but the idea is that in the end, the events are the same. It's just the why and how they happened that changes as you see the actual history. So that's encouraging because I do really care about the why and the how. It's kind of the number one thing I care about and cared about in Game of Thrones.
Well, let me stop there because like Anthony and I did, if you search back in the archives, or if actually you Google Bald Move, Fire and Blood, you can quickly find a podcast where we did a whole deep dive on this book. We did like a 4 podcast series on it. And one of the things we said is that like it's a little dry. You know, you got all these people, and they're all, you know, very similar names, and you don't have any faces to go with it, and you don't have motivations or uncertain motivations, because that's like when you get these different accounts from Mushroom and Eustace and Gildane, like, well, which one was it? Did this person piously reject the advances of the suitor, or did they spend the next 3 days locked up having freaky dragon sex in the towers of the Red Keep, or did she shove this dude out the window and he fell? Like, that goes to the motivation of like, why did this person, like, there's a rift here, but why? Was it because there was cheating? Was it because someone's rejected? Was it because, like, what is the deal? And just seeing the first episode, when I went back and reread the relevant sections of Fire and Blood, I found myself so much more invested because I can just plug in Matt Smith's face for Prince Daemon. Sure, I can, you know, like, in fact, I'm going to read on Sunday night. There is a single paragraph that's about 4 sentences long that comprise about 15 minutes of the pilot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you're going to see when I read you, it's like, okay, sure. But when you watch those 15 minutes, you're going to be on the edge of your fucking seat. And that is not the experience that you get from Fire and Blood. And that's why I'm so much more excited, because they are plugging in those stakes. They are plugging in those motivations. They are fleshing out these characters. They're not just, you know, like, you can read a history book about Abraham Lincoln and signing the 13th Amendment, or you can watch the movie Lincoln and have a completely different opinion. It's the same stuff that's happening, but like, it's just a more dynamic way to tell the story. You're watching it rather than reading about it hundreds of years later. And it turns out it's a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the book sounds like my own personal hell. I barely dip my toe into real world history.
Right. Right.
Dipping my toe into fantastic
bullshit history.
History is like, what am I even doing with my life? But
right.
That's just me. I know a lot of people really enjoy that stuff. But definitely, I am excited to see the ways that they flesh out, because I'm a fan of character drama. And my God, Game of Thrones brought a lot of character drama. If they can do the same in this show, I'm all in.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing that's maybe slightly conflicting or worrying me about that is,
okay,
they then go on to ask Ryan Condal, could a character who dies in the book survive in the show? And his response was, certain events will play out in ways that surprise the audience if they have read the book, given their understanding of the underpinning of history. Does that track with what you know of the Fire and Blood book? Is there situations in which characters are dead in one account and not dead in another?
I'm trying to think of the exact thing that he might be referring to. I know that, like,
well, he's very cagey about it, right? He's not giving a definitive answer, but yeah.
And it seems like because I read a little bit, I didn't just read the Dance of Dragons. I actually went back and read a little bit about the later stages of King Jaehaerys's, you know, long peaceful rule and his relationship with Queen Alyssa. And in that one paragraph I'm talking about, it seems like they lifted some details from earlier Targaryen history to, you know, so it's not even they're making stuff up. They're just maybe shifting things around. I can't think of one, but like I mentioned in that, you know, my description of like, you know, what three different possibilities, some guy got shoved out the window and another he was exiled. That might be something right. like that. And also, like, again, you know, Archmaester Gildane wrote this 200 years after the fact. He mm-hmm. might have gotten a couple things wrong.
He mentions that how the sources for the book itself are not reliable.
Right. And the other thing is you got to keep in mind is that George Martin is very involved with this. Like at beginning, it made it seem yeah. like he was keeping an arm's length at the production. But from what I've heard, he has been very present and voluminous in his contributions and like putting his thumb on the scale towards different options that. So,
I mean, he's got to do something other than finish Winds of Winter, right?
Yeah, just he's running out of excuses. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see. I'm going to be keeping up and reading along with Fire and Blood. You know, I've refreshed myself, and I'm going to each week kind of try to keep up and look for differences. But it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't blow my hair back if there's, you know, a Kingsguard that lives versus dies or somebody. But I can't imagine they're going to change the things like at the very top,
the big events,
you know.
The events that the show is founded on, you'd be crazy to change those because they're super right. cool, right? Like yeah. big developments that you want to see, but then book fans would be all over you if you did that. So
yeah,
and George Martin probably would too. I know he's a fan of his own works as much as anybody. Yep. So he's probably going to be there guiding this, saying, nah, you can't do that. You can't change this too much. There was a discrepancy in like the lineage of one of the kings that he came mm-hmm. back in this show and said, I want to fucking see this corrected mm-hmm. because they shortcutted this in Game of Thrones and I'm pissed off about it. So yep. he is very much a stickler for, you're going to do this the way that I intended it to be.
Yeah, no, he's very gardener in that way. We talk about the gardener versus architect, the storyteller type. And, you know, he goes to the trouble of making all these damn exhaustive family trees. Like if you go to mm-hmm. any fucking Targaryen on the Westerosi Wikipedia, you will see six generations deep at least of a family tree for every one of these people. If he's done the work, why not make sure that people follow it?
Sure.
So I don't know why he just went hands off on the double D's there at the end. That's old business. I don't want to open that back up.
Sure.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
So that's about all I had as far as questions for the setup and, you know, how close this is going to be to what we already have in the canon.
Mm-hmm.
You have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I got a couple other just random observations since I haven't made them on, you know, their officially unofficial podcast. I was a little surprised to see how much Game of Thrones this was like, you know, when I think about especially the early goings of Game of Thrones, it was defined by just amazing amount of blood and dismemberments and also a healthy amount of sex and sex position. And I don't know if this will be throughout the whole season, but this first episode is definitely letting you know that this is Game of fucking Thrones, baby. There is going to be titties and ass and dong flopping around. There is going to be horrific dismemberments and people being run through with swords. There was this controversial article with Miguel Sapochnik that I think Kim Renfro talked about on our show with Dave this week, where he seemed to be implying that there was going to be perhaps a lot, or they weren't going to be shying away from sexual violence on this show, which has been something that was always been controversial in Game of Thrones, you know, versus, you know, like, well, do you want to make a realistic medieval world, or do you, you know, like, or is it a fantasy and maybe we shouldn't lean into the things that are still, it's like, you know, people aren't getting attacked by dragons. Fried in a lot of dragon Larry the trauma in today's society. But, you know, sexual violence is a big part of people's lives, unfortunately. And which way do you want to lean into? I think they since clarified that there's, at least in season one, no sexualized violence.
I saw that.
But I will caution women or people who love women, which I hope was all of us, that there is some harrowing shit in this first hour, some difficult to watch stuff, especially if you're concerned with women's agency over their own bodies, ability to make their own reproductive choices. You might want to steel yourself a bit because there's some harrowing stuff. And men, we don't get off easy in this series either. There's a scene very early in the premiere that I can't wait to discuss with you about that's going to make some people squeam. Probably my biggest problem with the episode, actually. But we'll talk about that on Sunday night. But it's all very George Martin in the way that he's sometimes gross. The show is gross in that way. And I think they really, the big challenge is, could they get us to care about the central figures, Princess Rhaenyra, Alicent Hightower, that are so central to the story? And they did. Like, I have clear thoughts on, and I'm starting to develop some rooting interests, and I think they did a really good job with that. Miguel Sapochnik has not forgot how to shoot action. There's a lot of thrilling action sequences in the early goings of the series.
All right.
I do have questions, like, the way they're telling the story. And this is something going back to the very beginning of our previews. Like, you got the split timeline of, like, Viserys and when he's still a king and his daughter's young and she's palling around to Alicent Hightower. And then at some point they're going to have to tell the story of, you know, the princess and the queen, where the reds and the blacks and the greens are against each other, and they go from friends to rivals. How are they going to handle those time jumps? How are they going to structure the show? And the other thing is, there is an incidence of what I have described in social media and other places as high Martin heresy. Mm-hmm. There is a significant impact in the first episode to what my understanding of the lore was. And I, like I said, I've got a special, I think, 30-minute podcast that's going to be available on Sunday night, where me and Kim do a deep dive on that particular subject and what it might mean for the show and theory crafting and all that kind of stuff. So I'm also, that was such a surprise to me that they're going back and things that are that they're bringing up in this series are already impacting our understanding of the Daenerys kind of a timeline, that I wonder how much more of that there's going to come. Because on one hand, it's smart to make those connections to a popular show, but also, do you want to build those connections to a popular but ultimately flawed show that kind of ended in disgrace? Like, how much do you do you want this to stand on its own two legs, or do you want it to kind of, like, you know, not you know, like have to rely on people's interest in the, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire in a whole and where the White Walkers end up and all that kind of stuff? So,
yeah, I'm curious to see how much the sentiment that came out of the end of Game of Thrones affects the overall tone of the discourse on this show. Because I know the people who were saltiest about the ending, and I was pretty fucking salty. I had invested 8, 9, 10 years in that show. For it to end as poorly as it did pissed me off, especially for the reasons that it ended that way. The people who were big Song of Ice and Fire fans were the most vociferous with their dislike for what happened at the end of that show. I feel like they're coming into this one being the most vociferous about, like, are we really going to fucking watch another one of these when we know how it ended last time? I think if they don't, if they change too much from the Fire and Ice or Fire and Blood book, those people are going to jump all over any changes and start spinning it negatively, right? I think that there's a worry here that the discourse is going to turn negative immediately, no matter how good the show is, if it changes too much from what they expect of the history. So, and you know, that can spin out of control on the internet. You can get a popular sentiment, and then it becomes fashionable to just shit on a show for the sake of it. And I'm hoping that won't happen, because I don't know. I really enjoyed, like, 70 to 80% of my time with Game of Thrones, like some of the best television I've ever seen. And if this show can do even that, I will think it's worthwhile and hopefully stick the landing a little better. But
As a fantasy fan, you know, we're not just doing House of Dragon. We're also doing Rings of Power. It's the big, that's the other thing we haven't really talked about. Like, Prime Video and HBO Max are kind of like engaged in a heavyweight fight. This for fantasy supremacy, and I really want both of these franchises to do well, because, like, I've always been a big sci-fi nerd and a big fantasy nerd, and both of these falling on their face, I think, would have a pretty disastrous effect for fantasy in Hollywood. You know, at least high budget, high concept stuff like this. So I hope they really both do well. And again, I've only seen the first episode. I've always thought the material, the underlying material, like, if you're reading Fire and Blood, there are some set pieces involving men and swords and dragons and just thrilling sequences and just all these jaw-dropping set pieces. But my thing in the book was like, well, why do I care? Yeah. Well, I think the first episode gave me went a long way into saying, well, there's the reasons to care. These are why you don't like these people. And I think it's just going to, I hope it just continues to get better.
That said, we always do honest coverage here. I'm not going to shade my opinion. If I think the show sucks, I'm going to let you know.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's just how we operate here. So I don't know if you're looking just for sugarcoating on what becomes your favorite show. We'll see. See how it goes. Yeah.
But I expect there's this huge optimism, and it reflects turning internal polling and Bald Move. Like something like 90% of our audience is curious to excited, mm-hmm. where and less than 10% are like neutral to actively hating the idea. I think I'm glad that they did. I thought it was kind of weird that they had this hurry up. Oh, we're going to do the Long Night and we're going to go back 3,000 years into the beginning of the wall. We got Naomi Watts and it's going to happen the year after. That all seemed premature, and I'm glad in retrospect it was canceled, because having these 3 years going through the like it feels like a completely different world. And now people are ready to fall in love with a Game of Thrones property again. I think if they trotted something that was rushed out a year afterwards, it would be a tough sell. But this just looks very quality.
And I think the familiarity with the setting, the locations, the general structure of the world is going to be a positive for the show. I think that's going to help ease people into this. Whereas you go back 1,000 years or more and things really change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be harder to get people into. So I'm excited that it's this show that made it through the gauntlet. And I'm excited that it looks as good as it does based on the trailer and based on your opinion of the first episode. I'm just generally excited for it. I'm excited to be back into the Game of Thrones world and covering this stuff.
Yeah, me too. 100%. And I'm also excited by the fact, because I did think is like, I hear that like they won like 5 or 6 seasons. There's been rumblings that maybe that this will become a anthology, because there's tons of interesting Targaryen stories that like they might do a season or two or three seasons of the Dance of Dragons, wrap that up rather than stretch it out and then do like Dunkin' Egg stuff. There's a couple different Targaryen. I think there's 2 different types. There's the Blackfyre Rebellion that would be very interesting and would tie directly into the modern era Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things that they can play around in this 300 year history where the houses are relatively stable, the seats of power are relatively stable. It's just the cast kind of changes, but it's always the Game of Thrones as the backdrop. Yeah. That's got me excited too, because I was kind of wondering how the hell they would get 5 to 6 seasons out of this thing. But if they're doing 2 or 3 and then, you know, seeing a Fire and Blood become, or House of the Dragon becomes a Targaryen dynastic, anthology, I think that could be cool too. But that's way down the line. We got to see where this thing shakes up in the first season. That's the other thing I'm intensely curious about. What point in the Dance of Dragons will we? I've got 3 or 4 in mind that I think by its placement and its epicness that they could end. There's so much more I could say about the first episode that gives you, but I can't talk about it.
Yeah,
so.
I know. For me, having not seen the first episode, I'm excited to find out where in the story they pick up, because what are you going to do with Paddy Considine, right? Like as Viserys, he seems like you hire a big actor for that role. I feel like I want to use him, but there are question marks around that. Let's say
he's
not spoiling anything.
Yeah, I know. It's super interesting. And like, I will say that it was the structure of the show in the first episode is a huge surprise. It was completely different than what I thought they were going to do.
Okay.
In an entirely positive way. So, we'll see. We got 10 episodes. We're going to be spending in this world. We're going to be doing 3 podcasts a week, at least, maybe more. And we're going to be going head to head with Rings of Power. What a time to be a fantasy fan.
Yeah, we'll find out in 5 days how this goes. I'm excited.
Do you have thoughts on House of the Dragon? Send them in to hotd@baldmove.com. Again, if you want to get in on the ground floor of our instant takes and our instant talks, our live after show every Sunday during the reign of the House of the Dragon, go to support.baldmove.com. Get your account already set up so you don't miss the first 5 or 10 minutes of the show this weekend. And that's when we're going to see you next, this Sunday. 9 o'clock Eastern is when the House of the Dragon premieres for everybody. Can't wait for you to see it. And then just a few minutes after that airing, we'll be live. You can go to baldmove.com or patreon.com/baldmove, depending on what type of club member you are, and get access to those shows. So, yeah. We've got a pretty rowdy crew of Westworld veterans that are HBO fans. I think we're going to build on that coming right into House of the Dragon. So hotd@baldmove.com to get those long form takes, and can't wait to watch this with you guys this weekend. And that's it. We'll see you in just a few days. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.